Hello, this is Anil Kumar from Back to the Bible radio broadcast. How do we understand persecution rightly? On today's program, we will examine this subject with Dr. Neufeld in our current series, The Greatest Sermon Ever Preached. So let's go back to the Bible as we turn to our text in Matthew chapter 5, verse 10 to 12, and listen to this message called The Joy of Being Treated Like Jesus. Matthew chapter 5, verse 10 to 12. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Let's go back to the Bible with Dr. Neufeld.
In 2 Timothy 3:12, just before his execution by Roman authorities, Paul would write, "All who desire to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted, while evil people and imposters will go from bad to worse." 1 Peter 4:12-14 contains the Apostle Peter's teaching to the early church. He writes, "Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. But rejoice insofar as you share Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed. If you are insulted for the name of Christ, you're blessed, because the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you." See, interestingly enough, Peter includes not just the idea that Christians might be legally prosecuted, but for him, suffering includes the person who is merely insulted for the name of Christ. He seems to feel that the wider culture will not easily adapt to the gospel, but that does not always necessarily mean legal or prosecutorial persecution. See, the writer of Hebrews seems to indicate the same thing. I'm reading from Hebrews 12:3-4. He writes, "Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood." The idea here is that it might come, and it might not come. At least, it hasn't come up till now. Nonetheless, whatever hostility exists, whether legal or in a culture that protects our rights, there continues to exist in the world a hostility to the kingdom of heaven. One more example before we return to the Sermon on the Mount. One of the graphic images presented to us in the book of Revelation is the image of the great prostitute. She represents Babylon, and Babylon represents all that is evil and vile about the kingdoms of this earth. In Revelation 17, verse 2, we are told that the kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality with this prostitute, and consequently, the whole earth has become drunk with her wine. She is pictured clothed in all the finery of this world, and she is portrayed as the mother of all the earth's abominations, all the earth's horrors, and all her sins. And then in Revelation 17, verse 6, we come upon a horrifying truth. John writes, "And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus." If we were to put all these verses together, we gain a picture. The kingdoms of this earth, although appointed by God to keep evil at bay, have drunk of evil themselves. Hatred of God, abuse of power, a love of darkness haunts all human civilizations. No human society is righteous, no, not one. Even as human beings are corrupted by sin, so is every single human culture, and so is our country. The coming of the kingdom of heaven in the person of Jesus, who heals the sick and casts out demons, is the news that the kingdoms of this earth are destined to pass away. This is greeted as unwelcome news. The kingdoms of this earth, Jew and Gentile together, conspired to kill the king and nailed him to a cross. But Jesus broke the bonds of death and through that announced that whatever the kingdoms of this earth do, they will not destroy this seemingly small kingdom that has been placed among them. And once having persecuted the king and have failed, they now turn to persecute his subjects. Notice that in verse 11, the persecution is because of righteousness. In the Bible, righteousness is always a description of God himself. To be righteous is to act in accordance with what God demands. It is to submit ourselves to him and to his commands. Now, please notice, there is no blessing if the persecution occurs because of unchristlike behavior. When people mock televangelists, for instance, for their money-centered lifestyles or their immoral sexual misconduct, this is not the blessedness of what Christ speaks. See, when we live lives that are inconsistent with the righteous Christ, and then when people point out our hypocrisy, we do well not to claim Matthew 5:11. The almost universal disdain that so many have for a perverse form of Christianity, which centers on greed and power, and not on giving oneself for the poor, a lifestyle centered on self rather than the meek and the merciful, when this is mocked, don't claim it's all for Jesus. You know, I recently read an article of a female televangelist who's getting married for the third time to a rock star who was marrying her and he was getting married for the fourth time. Now, this televangelist had taken over from the last pastor who had died of an overdose from cocaine and heroin. And we wonder why non-Christians shake their head and mock. This is not the persecution Jesus spoke of. What he calls blessed is persecution for righteousness' sake. Now to verses 11 and 12. The first thing we notice is that for the first time in the Beatitudes, there's a change in the language. Up till now, the language has been in the third person. Blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who mourn, and so forth, all the way through to blessed are those who are persecuted. Everything Jesus has said is in the third person, but now things become personal, and the language switches to the second person. He now speaks directly to his servants, those who follow him. Blessed are you, he says. He wants his persecuted followers to hear a personal word from their king. See, the kind of persecution Jesus has in mind is found in many forms. First, he speaks of those who revile you. To revile means to criticize someone abusively. It means to insult them. It is to be belittled and mocked. Second, Jesus now mentions persecution, and the word seems to speak of an organized opposition, perhaps something that is instituted by law. And then third, Jesus speaks of those who utter evil against you falsely, and that's called slander. You know, the interesting thing about slander is that it is presented as if it were the truth. Those of you who know the history of the early church will remember that very early on, Christians were accused of sponsoring orgies. I mean, what else could they mean by their love feasts? And they were also accused of cannibalism. I mean, what else could they mean when they spoke of eating of the flesh and drinking of the blood of the Son of Man? And then they were accused of atheism. I mean, how else can you interpret their refusal to believe in the Roman and the Greek gods? And in consequence, they were called enemies of the human race. And all of that was slander. More than mocking, it was telling a story long enough and often enough until everyone believed it, and everyone began to think they were the problem and they had to be stopped. Now, in any context, whether it be illegal to be a follower of Jesus or whether it's simply the subject of mockery, every child of God knows what it is to be excluded and abusively criticized and slandered and suffer character assassination or, in some cases, prosecuted by law for the sake of Christ. And that's the point. This is happening for no other reason than that we have taken our stance to be identified with Jesus. But why is that a blessing? And Jesus explains why. Verse 12 says, "Rejoice and be glad, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." And think, for instance, of Isaiah. In Isaiah 30, verse 10, Isaiah is told by the people, and I quote, "Give us no more visions of what is right. Tell us pleasant things. Prophesy illusions." See, the real point here is that identification with Jesus puts us on a collision course with this world. Daniel Doriani, commenting on this passage, explains why. He says, "The world blesses the rich. Jesus blesses the poor. The world blesses the carefree. Jesus blesses those who mourn over evil. The world blesses the assertive and the aggressive, and Jesus blesses the meek and the gentle. The world blesses those who can get what they want, and Jesus blesses those who are hungry and thirsty after righteousness. The world prizes the trouble-free life, and Jesus tells his disciples to rejoice in persecution." See, all the values of the kingdom of heaven are at odds with every other culture on the face of this earth, and that includes the one we live in today. When the world hates us, we prove that we truly have embraced a kingdom whose values are unlike all of the values of the kingdoms of this world. We have left the Titanic with its pride and luxury, and we have embraced the poverty of the kingdom that will never pass away. Rejoice and be glad.
In John chapter 17, verse 17, Jesus prays to the Father, saying, "Sanctify them in the truth. Your word is truth." As Jesus' followers, we are called to grow daily in our walk with Him, and the primary way that we do this is through studying and applying His word in our lives. At Back to the Bible, these words also reflect the heart of our ministry, to help as many people as we can to grow in the grace and knowledge of Christ. If you are encouraged through these messages and want to get involved in the ministry of Back to the Bible, please feel free to call us or send a message at 9492-440070 or email us your request at info@backtothebible.in. Back to the Bible, leading people into a dynamic relationship with God. The Bible contains many passages about the topic of wisdom. Here are a few examples. James chapter 1 verse 5 says, "If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him." Or how about Ecclesiastes chapter 7 verse 12 says, "For the protection of wisdom is like the protection of money, and the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of him who has it." Wisdom is a critically important issue for all believers to understand and apply it. Hopefully, you have had a chance to listen to Dr. Neufeld's recent series on the subject called Skillful Living, focusing on Proverbs, known as wisdom literature. We learned all about what it means to live a wise and godly life. This great series is available on CD for our valuable listeners. To receive it, call us at 9492-440070 or email at info@backtothebible.in.